Hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is this week's Fireside Chat. You know what? We need a band. We gotta up the ante on this thing, right? Don't you agree? Like on, you know, on nighttime TV. I would love that. Have a band here.
Drummer.
Just a drummer?
Oh, yeah, like Kevin Banks.
Yeah, no. But, you know, trumpet or something. I mean, you need something. We do have Otto, though. And I'll tell you this. If I took a vote with you folks, Otto or a band, Otto would win. Otto, all well? Let me say hi to Otto. It's a boy. Good boy. You're such a good boy. All right, everybody. So this is my home. This is my everything. This is me. This is my favorite room in the house. By the way, does it look messy? I don't. It doesn't? Oh, that's because you're facing the neat side. Behind this camera are about 1,000 books. I have about 7,000 books. By the way, let me offer you a thought that probably hasn't been offered to most of you. There is something beautiful and meaningful in entering a home and seeing books. So, look, I read a lot on Kindle. I read most now on Audible, but it doesn't matter. It is a statement that you take ideas seriously, having books. And it's also beautiful. Bookcases and books is, I mean, it's just, it's cosmetically nice. But I'm just offering you a thought. And you know what happens when people visit? My proof is they walk over to the books. People are so curious. What does this person read? And it is sort of like an advertisement for your mind and your heart to people. So you should buy books and have a bookcase or two. It is a very, people, the first thing people do when they come into this room is just go, wow, look at how many books. And it's more than the norm, even for my generation, but it was common in the past to have books in a house because that was the only option about how to read. But people don't read as much anyway today, but that's another issue. I want to tell you a story. And those of you new to the Fireside Chat, please know nothing is rehearsed. It's completely spontaneous. It's my way of really getting you to know me better as a person, and no scripted, even though none of my speeches are scripted, but still they're a speech. And I get to know you because I get feedback with your questions and your emails, which I appreciate and read. Okay, so here, this literally happened 5 minutes ago. What I'm about to tell you happened 5 minutes ago. I have two sons. I'm speaking to my younger son who works in the rehab world. And told me he works with high school kids. He's very effective with young people. And so for whatever reason, normally they just know, he said, your first name, but his last name was apparently visible as well. And some kid then said, Prager? Dennis Prager? Prager you? And my son said, yeah. And usually he gets, oh, really? Wow. That's a kick. That's your dad? And this kid goes, your father is an effing retard, using the F word. And said something else. I remembered effing retard. So my son dealt with him well, I'm happy to say. But why am I telling you this story? And I said this to my son. The effect that those things have on me, is never personal. I don't, it doesn't matter to me. It matters to me only in that what it says about those that I fight. The other side isn't nice. And I don't mean people I differ with. Bret Stephens is a columnist at the New York Times. I adore him. He's a never-Trumper. We completely differ on Donald Trump. We've debated it on the New York Times Facebook page. He wrote a column criticizing me. I wrote a column criticizing him. I adore the guy. He's a wonderful human being, a special man. So the fact that I differ with you doesn't make you bad. The left, though, he's not a leftist. The left, as opposed to liberals, there are wonderful liberals in this world that I differ with on many things. But the left creates mean people. I am certain of this. How could it not? If you believe that everyone you differ with is racist, misogynist, hater, xenophobe, neo-Nazi, then of course you'll hate. This kid was brainwashed into believing Dennis Prager is a fascist. That's how sick it is. Also, we don't do this. We don't go to the tables of Democrats who were having dinner and start screaming at them. But they that side does it to Republicans who were having dinner. And I said on my show this week something which sort of went viral. And it is this. Those of us who are attached to traditional Western Judeo-Christian principles, we know the great biblical verse, love your neighbor as yourself, which is from the third book of the Bible, the Old Testament, the Torah, Leviticus. Love your neighbor as yourself. And it's probably the most famous phrase in the Bible. And I am writing a Bible commentary, the Rational Bible. When that volume comes out, it's not out yet, that particular volume, Leviticus. But when I explained it, I was saying there's a genius to that law. It doesn't say love everyone as yourself. It doesn't say love the whole world as yourself. It doesn't say love humanity as yourself. Just your neighbor. The left loves humanity, but they're awful to their neighbor. That I learned when I was in college. It was one of the great epiphanies of my life. It was a tremendous realization. These kids, specifically in my graduate school at Columbia, they were tearing down the college in opposition to the war in Vietnam. And I remember they ruined a professor's whole life. There were no computers then. His whole life was on paper. All of his work was on, they ruined all of his life's work because he supported the war in Vietnam. And that said, wow, so here they are marching for love and peace and ruining people's lives. And I put two and two together that they never translated their highfalutin love of peace and love. Love was a big word, most misused word probably there is. And they were pretty awful to people. They certainly didn't treat the women in their movement particularly well. That came out later. So I look at this as a lesson. I have only one question in the final analysis about any ideology. Does it make people kinder, finer, more decent, more just human beings or not? That's all that matters. Not your rhetoric. Are you a finer, kinder, more just more decent person because of your ideology, whether it's religious or secular? That's my only question. I'm not a Mormon, right? Obviously, I in my case, I am a religious Jew. But I gotta say, I am very impressed with what the LDS, the Latter-day Saints Church, has produced in most of its adherents. Obviously, nobody bats a thousand, but they have a very high batting average, and I've met a lot of Mormons. In fact, just a few weeks ago, I had a Sabbath, I made a Sabbath dinner at a Mormon's home, and they invited about five Mormon couples just to have Sabbath dinner with me. And it was a terrific evening, and these people were just terrific. And my experience with Mormons over a lifetime is that, you know, there are a lot of really wonderful Mormons. So I just have to say, there's something right about Mormonism. you can't deny it. I don't care what you think theologically. That's your business. I care what you produce. What is the fruit of your tree? The fruit of the leftist tree stinks. The fruit of the Mormon tree is quite nice. Okay, that's what I know, man. That's my bottom line. You're producing good people or not? I got a question. Wasn't there last fireside chat, I think, somebody asked, you know, what do I do? I don't know if it was on my radio show or the fireside chat. So Dennis, you know, I'm not a powerful person, you know. I don't have a microphone like you do. What do I do to make a better world? I said, there has been an American and Judeo-Christian answer through all of our history. The answer is you get married and you make good kids. That's how you make a better world. That's how 99% of humanity can make a better world. All right? You don't, most people are not going to find a cure for cancer. Most people are not going to solve the great riddles of society. You want a better world? Make good people. That's what I stand for. That's the essence of everything I believe. Make good people. Because we don't start out good. Another moronic secular left belief that people are basically good. That's why they don't bother making good people. Why make good people? We're already good. Human nature. It's amazing how many racists and sexists and xenophobes and misogynists there are, given that human nature is good, but they don't think things through, so they don't deal with that puzzle. Are you making good people? That's the question. When conservatives rallied in Washington, the Tea Party, they had massive numbers of people in the early years of the Obama administration, and they had gigantic demonstrations in Washington. I don't remember, many hundreds of thousands, maybe a million. I don't know what number. I don't want to exaggerate. What is gigantic? And the Park Service noted the place was clean when they left. You can't say the same after leftists have their demonstrations. I think that's not inconsequential. So if you judge things by their fruit, left fails. Produced a kid like the one that spoke to my son the way he did. I mean, it's mind-boggling. If I met the worst human being's child, I wouldn't speak to him like that. If I met Hitler's child, if Hitler had a child, I would not address the child like that. But they're excused. That's the reason they have to up the rhetoric about how bad we are. We're all racist, we're all racist, we're all racist, we're all racist, we're all white supremacists. It's the biggest lie of my lifetime. It's one of the biggest lies in human history that the Trump supporters are racist. It's just a gigantic lie. But they repeat it a lot, and then they start to believe it. But they have to believe it in order to justify how despicably they act, where they won't even go to a parent's Thanksgiving dinner. Oh, my parents are Trump supporters. In the Huff Post, there was just now an article by a woman saying, well, I'm thinking of, excuse me, I'm thinking of of not allowing my in-laws to visit my children. That is their grandchildren, because they support Trump. I don't want to bring hate into our family. Can you imagine the conservancy? You know, my in-laws supported Obama. I'm not going to let them meet their grandchildren. We conservatives would say, "What are you out of your mind? You're evil." That's their grandchildren. So this is important to remember. If you care about goodness, if you don't care about goodness, nothing I had to say now will matter to you. If you care about income inequality more than goodness, what I just said doesn't matter. So that's income inequality is not evil, by the way. Just to forestall a question, well, but that's a bad thing. Why is it a bad thing? I should talk about that. Why is income inequality a bad thing? Nobody has ever actually answered the question. It's only a bad thing if you think equality, equal income, is an ideal. Well, I don't know why it's an ideal. Every shortstop in the major leagues makes more money than I do. So what? And to be honest, I think I do more good for the world than shortstops. But I have zero issue with shortstops making many times more than I do. It's a non-issue. It's in a free society, people will earn money based on what other people want to pay. People pay a great deal of money to watch sports, so sports figures make money. That's okay with me. Robert De Niro makes more money than I. He's a fool. He's an enormous fool. In the Book of Fools, he's like his picture's on the front. But I don't resent the fact that he makes more money than I. He didn't rob anybody. You don't have to see his movie. People voluntarily watch his movies. Okay, got that out of my system. Goodness, folks, that's what counts. Should I mention the speech now, or should I mention it at the end? It's up to me. I hate that answer.
After.
Okay. That was good. You're hired. All right. Hey, I haven't seen any of these. Okay. All right. That's okay. I may have other weeks. Yeah, I don't know. Robert, 53, Mount Isa, if that's pronounced correctly, Australia. Hi, Robert in Australia. Hi, Dennis. Would love to hear your thoughts on what the Bible has to say about generosity toward the poor and needy, and about God's expectations of the rich for the poor and needy. Well, that really, it's almost ties in with what I was just saying. The Bible has a very simple formula. You tithe your income and give it to the poor. That's it. That's the biblical. You should give 10% of what you have to the poor. And by the way, in the Torah, which is my expertise, the first five books, where you get almost every law in the Bible is from the first five books, they have to also then give charity. You have to give from, even the poor have to give, because the biblical morality is obligations-oriented. Secular morality is rights-oriented. You make a bet, but I believe the biblical morality works better. You get better people when they think, what do I have to do, rather than what do others have to do for me? Anyway, so yes, of course, that's the expectation. We take care of them. The widow and the orphan, in fact, it's very powerful. It says, you know, you take care of the widow and the orphan and you shall fear the Lord. Why? Because the widow and orphan have nobody to protect them. Only God does.
Not government.
Well, certainly not. Yeah, not the government. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we've done. We have shifted. That's why in Europe people give much less charity than Americans. And I'm talking same income. They give much less because under socialism, you're raised to believe the government will take care of everybody, not you. Under the American Judeo-Christian / capitalist system, I am obligated to take care of me, I am obligated to take care of my family, and I am obligated to take care of my community. under secular and socialist ideals, the government takes care of me, the government takes care of my family, and the government takes care of my community. Which do you think will produce a better society? In a nutshell, that's a big difference between Judeo-Christian and socialist views of society. Okay, Ken, 65. Yeah, this is today's not teenage day. Ken, 65, Kinnelon, New Jersey, USA. Hello, Dennis. Hello, Ken. Most parents have a strong instinct to help their children succeed. When is it better to let our children fail on their own? What is the benefit of failure? Thanks for educating the ignorant on truth, justice, and the American way of life. That was Superman. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Ken. Yes, and if you have a strong instinct to help your child succeed, you must allow them to fail. That's exactly right. So much so, I remember when I attended my kids' baseball games, I was very torn. My heart wanted their team to win, and my brain wanted their team to lose. Totally, because of, based on this. You learn nothing from success. Well, it's not true. I take that back. There is one thing you should learn from success: how to handle it, and not let it go to your head. But you learn a lot more from failure, and it's a very important thing to do. This notion of they'll never fail—you know—you give your kids trophies even if their team comes in last place—is a disaster, and it's also fraudulent. You get trophies for winning. You don't get trophies for participating. The benefit of failure is awesome. You look at your own life. You're 53. Look at your own life. See what you learned from. Mason, 19. There we are, back to teens. Dallas, Texas. Do you think there is hope for the Democratic Party to move away from their far-left ideologies, a.k.a. socialism? Also, who is your favorite Democratic candidate? I don't have a favorite Democratic candidate. I wish I did. I was a Democrat till the Reagan era, by the way. Is there hope for the Democratic Party to move away from the far-left ideologies? There is no hope. The whole center is taken up by, contrary to what you will hear, it is taken up by conservatives. Conservatives dominate the center. So they have to move left to oppose conservatives. They have to go, or Republicans, they have to go very, very far left. And they already have everything they want. They already got a gigantic government. That's the biggest desire of the left. It's already enormous, but it's never enormous enough. Whenever the left makes a demand, please know it never will end with that demand. All liberal demands have already been met. So the only thing left is leftism. There's nothing left. So I'll take the social issue of same-sex marriage. Nobody would have predicted the rapidity with which the country redefined marriage for the first time in history to be between members of the same sex. Barack Obama spoke out against it. That's how recent the opposition was. He said, well, you know, as a Christian, I can't support same-sex marriage. We should give rights. Within a day of getting same-sex marriage, the next thing was, oh, well, the transgender should be allowed to compete against women, transgender women. Male bodies should be able to run in races and lift weights against female weightlifters and female track athletes. It doesn't stop. Leftism is constantly moving the goalpost. There is no left goalpost. The left goalpost is chaos. That's the left goalpost. Taylor, 19, San Diego. What's our time factor?
24.
Taylor, 19, San Diego. As a young woman starting university at UCLA in the fall, do you think? That's so adorable. I am not a young woman starting UCLA in the fall. But grammatically, it suggests that I am. It's adorable. People do that all the time, but I'm a stickler for good grammar. If you say, as a young woman starting university in the fall, then the subject is you, not me. So the next thing would be, is it necessary for me I totally get why you did this, but I love correcting people in a loving way. But anyway, this young woman wants to know, do I think it may be necessary to lie about my conservative values to others in a leftist environment if it means that I can get ahead in my career? Well, it's interesting. Ben Shapiro and I have a difference of opinion on this. We debated this, and I respect Ben a great deal. Ben thinks, not lie, but he thinks you should. There's no reason for you to be outspoken in any way. And if you have to cover it up in an exam, you should do so. It's not worth it. And he wants conservatives to end up going to Harvard and Yale and Princeton and Stanford. And I'm giving his argument. I have a different argument. My argument is, because I've been asked this by a lot of parents on my radio show, and this is what I've always said. I can't tell you what to tell your child, but I'll tell you what I would tell my child, or what I think about any child. If you learn to compromise your values to get ahead in college, when will you stop? Simple as that. And if you don't get into a great graduate school, so what? Micah 12. Ooh, 12. Is that a record?
I think so.
Deerfield, Illinois, originally from Texas. That is hilarious. Once a Texan, always a Texan. Does the radical left realize how illogical some of their statements really are, or are they blinded by the fact that the statements imply goodness but don't know that they do more harm? The left is based on the heart, is on feelings. Therefore, logic is not critical. And that's it. It's not reason. When they, it's all passion. The intellectual basis is non-existent, even though intellectuals support it, but it's not done intellectually. That you can defend biological males who identify as females running against females and beating them in the races, defeating them, you can defend that? Is that logical? Of course not. There's no logic to that. In my recent column, I wrote about this. In one of the international competitions, a New Zealand biological male who says he's a female, and I grant that. You ought to say you're a female, fine. I'm not going to fight you on that. If you look like a female, have a female name, dress like a female, I will regard you as a female. But not for the sake of sports, where biology counts, not feelings. Women's sports are gradually just being destroyed. And the feminist groups are saying nothing. Because I've always said that all left-wing groups use a group to further their agenda, but they don't care about their group. Feminist groups don't care about women. They care about leftism. LGBT groups don't care about LGBT. They care about leftism. The Communist Party, all communist movements, spoke in the name of the worker. They didn't give a damn about workers. This is all leftist history. Donald Trump has done more for blacks in 3 years in the United States than the NAACP has done in the last 20. What's our timing?
29.
Okay. Well, I'll take one more. Crystal, 28, in West Covina, California. Dennis, what advice would you give a first-time parent? Boy, do I have a lot. In a nutshell, assuming you're married, your husband comes before your child. That's advice number one. Putting the child before the spouse, for either spouse, is the road to a damaged marriage. Number two, self-control is infinitely more important than self-esteem. Those are my two first pieces of advice. to a first-time parent. By the way, I will be speaking major evening with one of the great Christian spokesmen of our time, Ravi Zacharias. We will be speaking in Colorado Springs. Oh, we got the date. I think it's the first Saturday night in September. So anyway, is that right? Yeah. Okay. So go to DennisPrager.com. Where is Dennis? That's the part. And you'll see in the listing of my speeches. You should all have it anyway to know where I'll be. We're in PragerU's doing a lot of things with Summit Ministries, and they're hosting this. It's be a very powerful evening. We have done events together in Atlanta and in L.A. and now Colorado. And he's a good man. So it'll be a special evening. All right then, we're good. Thank you, my friends. I want to remind you that much of what I say is contained in my Bible commentary, The Rational Bible. That would be a nice book to start with. By the way, that'll really blow people's minds to walk into your house and see a Bible. That's a real statement. Then you're really in the counterculture. Okay, everybody, see you next week. Thanks for watching. Thank you for watching. If you'd like to keep these fireside chats free, please do by donating to PragerU.